is what I have here. And then only a few weeks later, we had a massive earthquake again in Bogota. That was 6+, I think. And then we had quite a few little earthquakes in Southern California. Then Bogota had a second massive earthquake, also 6+. And then last week, I think Alaska had a 6+ near Homer. And then Eureka, just a few days later, had another near Eureka. It's out in the ocean somewhere, had a 6+. So you can see that the Earth, particularly in this area, is changing her physical body. She is recreating herself. And a lot of what happens is, it's for the good, but to us who are living on her body, it can be extremely dramatic, frightening, overwhelming, and all of that. So that's part of the importance of really integrating the New Year's energies and staying flexible and open and remembering what's really important to us, which of course the bottom line is that we are light, we are spirit, we are eternal, and we are love. And that's really the major thing that we have come to learn about and to receive. That's the major focus for us. So, just thinking, go ahead, Lori. Oh, people are out there looking for more coffee. We're scarfing it up, huh? I haven't even touched wine here. The Earth is in the process, just as we are, of creating her light body. And to do that, her face will shift and change. The continents will shift and change. I think Japan is one of the first indications, but there's going to be a lot of change also in our country, the United States. My sense about that is that it is for our highest good, but it will appear to many of us to be terrifying or very chaotic. So it's very important to nurture our heart energy and our people that we love and ourselves. One of the reasons I think that a lot of the earthquakes in this nation tend to occur is that some time ago when this nation came into being, there was a great angelic focus that happened, and it was this nation that agreed to bear the light for the world to assist others. But somehow along the way, in the last couple of hundred years, we've very often gotten off that track and lost our focus. And instead we've gotten into telling other people how they should live their lives. Other countries are really taking away the power that they have to govern themselves instead of maybe holding the energy for them and assisting them in that regard until they can actually do it themselves. Vietnam to me is just a prime example of that, where there were so many nations involved in that tiny little country, and it's extremely kind of the people have dispersed now in a lot of different countries, a lot of different of the races there. And the country itself is still recovering and trying to decide what it wants its government to be. You're seeing massive changes in Russia, and there's a tremendous amount of work by Archangel Michael that is evident there, trying to get them to reformulate their focus, especially in the area of human rights. It's also very active in the South American countries. And in South Africa in particular in the last few years, it was very, very intense. And we now have some really wonderful changes that have come apart, or have come to be there, but we have a lot of work that still needs to happen. Yeah. So, yeah.
What about California? I mean, in the past year we've had floods, fires, mm-hmm. riots, earthquakes, poison, water contamination, you name it. It seems like anything of negativity is just focused on this state, rather than, even though, like in the Midwest where I have a lot of family, that flood was not anything compared to the one they had like in 1897, yet, you know, the media made it look like this humongous disaster.
Oh, really?
In comparison to what they've experienced on other things, like the farmers and their droughts and things, they felt that was much more devastating than the flood.
Yeah.
But it seems like California, there's just been a focus of...
That's a really good question. Yeah. That. Change for sure. Well, my sense about it is that a lot of it is a cleansing and a healing that nature is trying to bring about. In this state in particular, especially in the southern part of our state, we have an extremely materialistic focus. Values are such that the meaning of success is really turned around from what it should or could mean to us on a really deep inner level. And I think that's one of the reasons that Southern California gets a lot of the focus sometimes of floods in particular and earthquakes as well. Floods are another cleansing process that comes through nature to change. Water is extremely clarifying and healing. If you go to the ocean, in particular the Pacific Ocean, you'll feel often just so much clarity mentally when you leave, or so much more peace in your body. The Atlantic has a different energy, but the Pacific in particular carries this very nurturing, peaceful, strengthening energy. So a lot of the change that's happening in our state is to get us to reawaken. The energy that's carried in this state is not carried anywhere else in any of the other 49 states. So I was speaking earlier about the United States kind of being the light of the world for a time, for a great number of years. So that is true also of this particular state. A lot of times new ideas or new ways of behaving and living and everything seem to come forward first in California. But then we sometimes skew that or take them to the nth degree. And it's to get us to align with the truth of what is here for us, which is to be in alignment with our purpose, to hold a heart energy, to be aware of all cultures and blending and all of that. A lot of that is happening in this state, and we're having a lot of feedback as to whether or not that's appropriate or inappropriate. And earthquake energy in particular really impacts your physical body. So when there is an earthquake in Japan or in Northern California, even though we live here, you're going to feel the effects of that earthquake roll through your physical body. A lot of times lately, my clients have been saying to me, I need to sleep more. I don't seem to have the energy that I need to work. I'm falling asleep at work, or I sleep on my lunch break or take a nap at break or whatever. And I was thinking, what in the world?
I've been tired lately.
Yeah.
I know.
Well,
requiring a lot of sleep.
It's a massive physical energy that the earth is shifting, and it does impact our, by her standards, little physical bodies. So to me, earthquake energy is extremely enervating. The few times that I've been somewhere where I'm actually feeling it move through my body because it's happening where I live, I feel extremely heightened and kind of like I'm going to jump out of my body, that feeling that you're going to be out of your body or something. But it's very enervating for the physical body, and the body has to not be frightened of that. That's where the spiritual work comes in as well, helping the body to remember that it can carry a bigger, more vast energy. And earthquakes do not need to be enervating. They can be energizing. They can lift you and expand you, give you greater reservoirs of physical energy than you normally have.
Is that the same with, like, storms and stuff?
Because yes.
The only time I can
storms are extremely energizing.
I get all that energy, and I clean windowsills and everything.
Yeah, I love thunder and lightning.
That's coming in?
Yes. But you might be more attracted to or more in sync with storm energy, say, than with earthquake energy. And it's the same with massive bodies of water moving. Getting comfy.
I was reading one book about fairies, and they said according to your earth sign that you're born with, you're more aligned with those kinds of energy.
Yeah, that's generally true.
What's the sign for Capricorn then?
I don't remember.
Ocean and storms.
I'm thinking it's earth, but I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm Taurus. So where is that one? I'm Taurus, and that's an earth sign, so I love any of the natural phenomena. But I think that has something to do with why I'm not really terrified of earthquakes. I mean, certainly I think if my house was falling down, I'd be really excited, you know. I'd be scared just like anybody else, naturally. But underneath all of the things that happen that are natural phenomena, there is a much greater work that is happening. And to have the bigger picture or a deeper perspective sometimes helps move through the fear a little faster than normally. So that's just kind of a little bit about what's happening this year. And there is more to come, more to come.
It's a big... Does that determine the energies that you're coming in on, like being on an earth sign or a water or... However that is that the energy that you connect with?
I would say yes. Astrologers say that your basic sign, whether you're Capricorn or Taurus or Pisces or whatever, really tells a lot about how your physical body responds and how your emotional body responds, all of that. I don't know a whole lot about astrology, but yes.
Well, even though yes. Like, with the angels and the energies, does that have an effect on your physical as well as your emotional
state? Yes.
The energies that when you enter the angels that are
there? Yes, definitely. Definitely. It's all what happens before you come in is you're allowed to kind of see an overview of what your potential lifetime looks like, what events you might want to play out. And there's a great group of angels that assist the soul in deciding kind of what your script will be, you know, the lifetime. And you can see where what's most appropriate as far as place to enter, parents, family, and friends, relationships. What part of the world is most conducive to what you need to learn, which is probably why we're in California this time and we're not in Africa or something, although I've always wanted to go there. Yes. Yes. So, yes, that it has a great impact. A great impact. We'll talk more about the guardian angel and her work with you as you come in and everything later today. But all the choices... the free will thing is much bigger than just this planet where you reside. It is like a pebble dropped into the water and the ripples go way out. But we only see this lifetime, generally speaking. So we're not really aware of the fact that free will also expands up into the heaven worlds before you choose to make an incarnation, before you come in. And it has to do with your time of leaving as well. When there is sudden death or when there is a suicide or any of those things, it's really your soul, in alignment with divine will, of course, that has the last word about whether or not you're going to leave and how you're going to leave at a particular time. So it's all connected. It's all connected. Hard to talk about that in a really brief space. What time is it? How did it get to the 11 already? Okay. I'm going to move on and just give you, I've got some notes here to tell you a little bit about my history and how it is that I got so involved in this work. I've mentioned that I grew up on a ranch in Northern California. It was pretty isolated. Originally, we lived in town, but then my parents, their dream was to have a big ranch, and so they bought 10 acres, and which by ranch terms really isn't too big, but we did live way out, and I was very isolated as a young person, and I had no playmates except my siblings. And I think part of the reason that I'm so connected with angels or with the nature kingdom in particular is that the ones that I spoke to were the trees, were the pheasants and the birds and the plants that were on the property. And I heard them speak back to me. And I cannot remember a time when I did not and have not heard my guardian angel's voice. That's just always been a part of me. My religious background is Roman Catholic. And so as a little child, I was taught anyway that I had one. It was very easy for me to accept that. It was just a given. And I spoke to that angel incessantly and often heard information that no one else heard, which was very disturbing when I would share that with family or relatives. So it was difficult to understand that no one else heard in that way or saw or felt. I often was kind of said to be the child in the family who had the overactive imagination, and sometimes I was even told that I was a liar, that I was lying, because when I would see something, I could see it so plainly or hear it so plainly, but no one else could. You know, what else did they have to go on? So it took all of my childhood and teenage years before I realized that I really had a talent or a gift or a skill that not everyone else was carrying with them or just wasn't as quite developed. And it took me many years to learn how to tune my receiver up or down, such that now if I'm not interested in seeing someone's auric field, I don't see it. There was a time in my life when I had a really difficult time going to the theater, you know, going to see movies or something, because I'd see all this other stuff. It was very distracting, very. I couldn't go shopping a lot of the time because I heard other people's information. And I can remember clearly having lists sometimes written, and I would just be staring at my list and repeating it because I'd get all of this other input, and I would just want to get out of there as fast as I could. So It's a process of learning to tune your receiver, and that took me all of my early years and through my 20s, I would say. When I was very little, going to sleep at night was always an adventure because usually there were a lot of lights in my room. And I always thought of that as being my guardian angel. And I'm not positive that that's exactly what it was, but it was always comforting and supportive. It helped me relax at night. That was one early manifestation. And then, of course, when I was six, my little brother, who was a year younger than me, Glenn, developed cancer. And within a year, he was gone. He died. And that was a major impact on my life. During that time, the sole support that I had really was my angel voice, my angel's voice, because my parents, we lived in Vacaville in Northern California, and the hospital that really could treat him well was in San Francisco. So my parents were gone for days and weeks at a time, and I lived much of that year with my grandmother, and in great fear, you know, he was just suddenly ripped out of our life. And also in the 50s, they really, at least in my parents' experience, they really didn't explain, trying to protect me, no doubt, but really didn't tell you what was happening. So I had no knowledge of where he was or how ill he was or anything. And it was the dreams I had and the out-of-body experiences at night I had that helped me stay, I think, present through that time and not get totally overwhelmed. When Glenn did die, he often appeared to me in dreams, or he would just show up in my room and give me teachings or inform me where he was and that he was happy and well and fine. And he always looked like my little brother, that beautiful little person, until I was much older. And then I think in my teen years, he looked more like a young man. And for a time, I didn't recognize who he was. But I truly believe, because he, not only has he told me, but I've just had teachings from my own guides and my angels as I grew, that Glenn's death, that whole experience, was a gift really from him to act as an impetus to awaken our family. And I'm the one that got it first, but all my two brothers and my other sister also awakened from just the things that I shared with them over the years as they grew up. My sister was born 4 months after my brother died, which was very difficult for my mother and the family, having just moved out to the ranch and everything. It was a very hard time. But Claire has since often told me that it's my sharing of these experiences and things that propelled her also onto her path of investigating deeper, and my two brothers similarly. So I feel that even though that was a major hard time, I would say, in all of our lives, it was always a great, also a great gift on the part of Glenn. And it certainly blew me wide open at that point. When I was, that same year, I believe, I made my first communion, and I had an experience. You know, you wear the little white dress and the veil, and you have the rosary and the white stockings and the white shoes, and I was just so excited, and it was just a perfect day and time. And the nuns that had instructed us, I didn't go to Catholic school, but we had a group of nuns that came in and gave us the teachings and things. One of the firm things that we had been told not to do was to turn around and look at any of our family in the pews. So there was the little kids in the front, a little break, and then family and everything, and we were not, under any circumstances, supposed to turn around and see where they were. Or you knew one of the nuns was going to get you or glare at you or something, you know. Well, halfway through the service, I think it was before I actually went up to receive communion, I had this incredible urgency within me, and I could feel this energy around me to look behind me. And my mind, of course, was saying, you can't do that, Lil, you can't do that. If you're going to get hit, if you do it, they're going to get you. But I just suddenly felt I had to turn around and look, and I did. And there was an incredibly beautiful young woman sitting right behind me. She was remarkable in her appearance. She had clothing that seemed to be what we would describe as being from the times of Joseph and Mary. You know, she wore a mantle, but she had this beautiful curly hair that flowed down to her waist. It was kind of light brown. And she had a long gown on with kind of sandals on her feet. And she just gave me an angelic smile, and her eyes had so much energy coming out of them, and just kind of nodded her head at me. and it was worth anything I got from the nuns to turn around and see that being sitting there. And I feel that that was one manifestation of my guardian angel to let me know that she recognized my heart and what I had been through that year. And it was just a blessing, a great blessing at that time. After the ceremony was over, of course, I drove everyone nuts trying to find the young woman, and, you know, you're supposed to stand still and get your pictures taken and everything. And anyway, that was a real interesting experience. When I was 10 years old, that was one of the most traumatic years of my childhood. And I look back and can see now that it was a year of initiation for me on many levels. But at the time, I seemed to just always be sick. I had every childhood illness, I think, except mumps that year. I was also hit in the mouth with an axe and nearly lost the front of my mouth and my teeth, but made it through that. And the last thing that happened to me, yeah, fourth grade, I don't know how I survived all that. My dad. Mm-hmm. And I thought that he had stopped and was done, and I walked behind him, and he swung the axe really hard on my poor dad and my mom. But I survived. I sometimes think that to have that impact physically somehow impacted my ears, my eyes, and all of the centers, third eye, throat, and the crown, because my clairsentience, clairaudience, all of clairaudience is the ability to hear on the inner levels, and clairvoyance is to be able to see things beyond what is here. Clairsentience, similar to feel and know things beyond. All of that seemed to accelerate from that point. So I think that might have, there was a purpose in that happening. Yes, I know. And all the diseases that I had, the last one was scarlet fever, and I wasn't expected to survive that. They put me in quarantine in my room. You didn't go to the hospital, apparently, in the early 50s for those things in those days, and there weren't any inoculations, not as many, anyway, as we have now. But what happened to me was I was put in a dark room, no light, no sound, and no human beings except for my mother for about 2 weeks solid. And, you know, you're 10 years old. It was desperately lonely and isolated feeling. And I was not supposed to have any sunlight because the high fevers that I was having, they feared I would lose my sight. And my hearing, they were also fearing I would lose my hearing because of the fever. And, oh, I had huge ridges in my nails, my toenails, and my hands and feet peeled. And it was just a totally weird happening. But what I most remember about that time is that when I was so ill or felt like I just wanted to die, I just wanted to leave, or I was desperately lonely, at the end of my bed, there was always this beautiful angelic presence. And this particular being appeared as a remarkably beautiful young man, and he often helped me be still or be quiet, or do whatever it was I had to do, whatever procedure they were doing. And I have a clear memory of him standing with his arms open like this, or sometimes he would go like this, you know, to help me to be quiet, and just great waves of harmony and peace and stillness. And often I left my body or had very remarkable, vivid dreams in which I was free and could run and do the things and be happy, you know, that other kids could do. So I know that his presence helped me survive that. By the time I was 12 or 13, I was questioning everything, and the answers I got from my teachers and mainly from the church teachers were, it's a mystery, accept it on faith. It can't be understood or known. And that really disturbed me. It wasn't what I was looking for. So I thought I'd find that in a convent. So when I was 14, I tried to enter either the Franciscans or the Carmelites. I was really going for the Carmelites, which I thought was the hardest, and therefore probably the holiest, and, you know, I'd probably get to heaven the fastest or something. Luckily, my mother was thrilled, you know, she's got a vocation, oh, this is great. And luckily, every convent that we visited said, they looked at me, and I was bone skinny at the time, I was very, very young, and said, no, you have no life experience, go back into the world, live your life, and then if you have a true vocation, you will return. Well, I never went back, of course. So that was kind of the end of that, and that was the beginning of my personal search, really, and reading and everything. At 19, I had Bell's palsy, which was the paralysis of from the top of my skull to the base of my throat, one half of my face. also involved my hearing. I lost all my hearing. The eye didn't work and all of that. I was told at the time, inwardly, that this experience would deepen my compassion and open my heart and put me in touch with my healing ability or capacity, which I was very resistant to allowing to come forward. At the time, I thought, no way, no, it just couldn't be. But that's exactly what did happen. I did go to the doctor and was in college at the time and was told that it was such a massive paralysis that it was incurable and that they would do some physical therapy for me, which they did for 6 weeks, but there was no sign of return. And so what I did was I went back and read everything and prayed like crazy, read everything I could find about healing, and basically began to heal myself. And within 6 months, I began to get return and have no problem with hearing or vision other than I do still wear glasses. But I did go back to the hospital to show them what had happened and ended up working with some of the patients, especially some men, I think, that were in their 30s and 40s. They were quite frightened of the experience. And so that also was a great teaching. I learn a lot through my physical body, it seems. Anyway, then at 20, the next year I began to have a series of dreams in which a whole group of white beings came and taught me. And one of the things I clearly remember them telling me is that by the time I was 40, I would be doing the work that I had come to do, that I might as well leave college because I wasn't learning what I had come to learn, that I needed to begin to study on my own, and that eventually I would be teaching not only about the angels, but I would be teaching about the nature spirits as well, the fairies and elves, the gnomes, the water and air spirits, and all the things that I knew were real and could hear and see. And I was sure that was, you know, that there was no way that I was going to be doing that stuff. But of course, that is exactly what's happened. And those beings stayed with me that whole year. It was an amazing time in my life, and I made a lot of notes, and a lot of the things that I was inspired to talk about or learn about in more depth came from those that series of dreams at that particular time in my life. And I can remember telling a friend, just I was desperate because it seemed so odd, that I had this thing happening. And also about that time, the other weirdness that happened was I began channeled writing. And I would just get this great urgency to sit and to begin to write. And these wonderful, encouraging, uplifting messages would come through. And at the end, a signature would come out, the Brotherhood. It was in my handwriting, but this other thing. And that really seemed very weird to me. So I finally reached out and asked this one friend. And she said, well, it's probably the White Brotherhood. And that really didn't impress me. I thought, oh, this sounds really hokey. But she got me some material to read and to talk about it with me. And I found out that the White Brotherhood is really a group of ascended beings that has nothing to do with skin color or anything like that. Ascended beings, some who have been in physical, some who have not. And that sometimes they do contact humans who are open or ready for information and assist them in their growth, and apparently that's what was happening at that time. So through my whole 20s, I really studied a lot. I also got married and had 2 children during that time, and for a while tried to be normal. I tried to shut all the stuff out and not do it, not hear it, and every time I did that, I got very ill when I did it in a major way. So it was probably not until my mid-30s that I really began publicly doing sessions for people, either readings or counseling sessions, healing work, or teaching. And I also bumped into the experience of cancer towards the end of my 30s, which really helped me get in touch with the fact that if I continue to repress what I've come to do, or the work that I have come to do, I probably will have another very serious disease. So I said yes in a very massive way and had cards printed about that time finally, and really came out of the closet at that point. So that's just an overview to let you know some of my experiences. There are many more. It's really hard to put it in a nutshell. Sure.
What kind of cancer did you have?
I had breast cancer, which I found really interesting because the breasts are the nurturing, life-giving, you know, for the child and the mother, and I was not nurturing myself at all. I was denying my truth and